Abrama.
Thank you, Dean. My name is Abrama Menadict. Thank you, Dean, for asking me to a chat. It's always an honor. It's actually a pleasure as well. I was thinking, as a good addict, I got my chair memo on my phone in case this happens. I thought, I'm going to get this out. I'm going to impress everyone. But I think I want to start with where I'm at. And I just had my testosterone injection. I have to have this testosterone injection because I had cancer many years ago. And every time I had this injection, I get so angry, so fuming, so violent. And I was reflecting on this. I came here tonight and I feel completely calm, which to me is a testament of this recovery, because without what I learned in these rooms, basically, I will run with my own self mechanism. I came into recovery 7 years ago. It was May 2012. I came because I woke up one day in hospital. It was the last overdose I had. I wake up, I was intubated, I was in the Royal Free, and this nurse told me that I was alive. And I cried and cried and cried because I didn't want to be alive. I just wanted to die. And when you wake up, you're thinking, oh, I can't even die, jeez. It's that place where you can't go further on. You don't want to go further on, but you can go back. And that's the problem. I was in between this kind of limbo where I know that if I will carry on using drugs, it will kill me. But not using drugs, it was incomprehensible. I'm originally from Italy. I'm from a very beautiful little town, the Adriatic coast. My parents, until step four, I thought my family was perfect. Then at that step four, I realized my mom was very dysfunctional and my dad was an alcoholic. I grew up in an environment where for whatever reason, I felt different. Growing up, I thought that I was different because I liked men. I thought because I'm gay, so I'm different. Then because I was poor. Then because I was dyslexic. And so I grew up with this feeling that I didn't belong to anything. So when I was 19, 12, 21, I packed my stuff and I moved here. And I moved to London when I was 21. Up to this point, I didn't get drunk. I never used drugs there ever. I grew up in a Catholic church, so I was a good Catholic boy. And the first things that I tried, it was one night, my ex brought me to this flat in Wood Green, and he told me to smoke these things in this bottle with this straw. And I was like, yeah, it's fine. And so I smoked that thing, and I thought, wow, this is amazing. Wow, this is amazing. I didn't question it until my ex was deported back to Africa, and I stopped. But there was something planted. You know when you got these things inside your head? It was planted there. These kind of feelings of this uplifting feelings that whatever is in your chest, in your mind, it was gone. Fast forward, my 20s has been a long list of tragedy, very long. I became positive, HIV positive. 10 months later, I was told that I had a terminal cancer, so I have to go through chemo, bone marrow transplant. I survived that. My dad got sick with cancer. My mama had a brain hemorrhage. It was good 10 years of this kind of, I don't know if any one of you have this, that when you think you start to breathe again, some really insane tragedy struck again. Mm. And it's this 10 years of boom, boom, boom. And the way I coped, it was I start using drugs. At the time, I thought, you know, the usual party drugs, things and that. Until after the cancer, I one night, somebody offered me my drug of choice. And I remember that night because when this guy offered me this thing, I just felt that the noise in my head that is constantly self-loading, you apart, you this, you that, blah, 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 blah. It just gone. I didn't feel anything anymore. And I remember thinking, I'm literally in trouble because I knew that I would never stop to get that. I would never renounce to go back to feel that shit as I used to feel. And I said to myself, you know what? I had enough bad things in my life. I think I just have a break. And I thought that, you know, shooting up, it was a nice break. That's an addict. It's like, you know, I'm a nurse as a profession. That's how weird the things are. I'm a sexual health nurse, and I thought that, you know, shooting up, having sex party with strangers, it was perfectly fine. I thought, you know what, my life is shit. I made my decision. And the funny thing with addiction, that's why I learned in my steps, it was this, that in the beginning you think that this is a break from life. Then you start to believe that actually life is the problem. And then you start to believe that you are so bad that fuck life and everyone in, I'm staying this side. And you renounce. You're thinking, you know what? No, I'm going to overdose. I'm going to wake up one day. I'm going to overdose. I'm going to die. That's fine. And I came to this country 20 years ago because I had a dream. It's a bit like the Miserable. I had a dream. I wanted something better for my life. Welcome. So I wake up in this hospital. The counselor, they saw me through my cancer treatment, came and see me and said, what are you doing? You survived all this and you're dying of this? And it was the first time I actually burst in tears. And you know when you cry that you can't stop? The things when the other person look at you, and you shit, oh God, what did I ask? It's like, oh, I don't know, I don't know, I don't know. And she turned around and said, what about you go to NA? And I was, In my mind, NA was in the movies, the old things. And I really thought, I said, actually, you know what? I'm going to go to NA because this will look very good in my funeral. I thought, you know, or my urology would be like, bless, he went to NA, he tried. And I visualized this. So I went to NA for my first time. It was a gay meeting, an LGBT meeting in Seoul. And I hated it. I didn't hear anything. I vomited all my anger, all my depression, all my things, and I walked away. Because I saw the opposite of what I was looking for. I saw all very well-together people, and I felt like shit. So you walk there, you see all these people, you think they're all happy and cheerful. So what am I doing here? So I left. But because I was so alone, I keep on going. I keep coming back. You know, I remember these things. This guy said to me, keep coming back. And I was like, and I remember crying in the tube because I said, you are so pathetic and alone that the only place you can go is with these people. So I kept coming back until one morning I went to this meeting that it became my home group. It's in Notting Hill. It's called Morning Glory. It's Saturday morning. that's very pertinent. And I went to this meeting. I went there, and it was as I arrived. It was I always say this because it really broke down my mind. I went there, and it was all very blocky, almost like tonight. It's very blocky, very like, you know, proper, like, you're right, mate, yeah. And apart from my sexual innuendo in my head, that would get me off completely, like, ooh. But I felt so it's like, no, I'm off, no, I'm not here, no. But I stayed because I was so terrified to actually stand up and leave. I was like, oh, I stay until there is a minute to pray, and then, And I remember listening to this guy. He was this short. He had belly up to here. And it was rough as something else. And he started crying and crying and crying. And there was something very peculiar about men crying. Because when I grew up, my dad never cried. My brothers never cry. You don't cry. Italians talk and shit, but you don't cry. As a man, you don't cry. You don't cry. And I felt so uncomfortable. And I thought, no, I need to leave. I need to leave. I need to leave. But I stayed and I opened up. So finished the meeting. Me tried to work my way out. And this guy arrived. And he noticed me. So he stand opposite the door. I tried to avoid him, like, okay, bye-bye, yeah, bye-bye. And he hugged me from, literally, he blocks me. And I was like, oh, thank you. I said, thank you. And you know when somebody locked you in with a hug? And I was like, oh. And he wouldn't let me go. He wouldn't let me go. So initially, I thought, oh, this is a bit weird. And then more he locked me in, and more I felt this. I don't know how to explain it, but basically I felt that something was breaking inside. And I start crying and crying and crying because I felt that in that meeting, the guy that it was nothing like me actually saw my pain. And that's what I actually always wanted, even in my using, somebody to see my pain, where I'm coming from. I stayed in NA. It's really difficult to explain a 7 years journey, but I tried my way first. I kept on relapsing because I was lying. I didn't want to you guys see my pain, my shame. I wrote all my lies on the back of my step four, finished my step four and relapse. When I came back, I was ready and willing to let people know the real me. And it has been a very long ride because in recovery, I have to learn how to let go my insecurity. I need to let go what people think about me. Step three, when people say step three, it's really much more deep than, oh, I handed over to God, this and that. It's actually saying to yourself, you know what, I'm doing a chair tonight. If you think the chair is shit, it's none of my business. I have to find the sense of my high power. And I always find on this. I thought I found my high power. My high power initially, I thought it was Lady Gaga. That's how crazy I was. Then I thought, no, I had my high power, my God, my understanding. And then I was a year clean and my dad died. And when my dad died, I was angry. I was so fucking angry. I said, that's where I have to push myself to find something makes sense to my brain and my heart. And that's what kept me clean. I think, I don't know how much I got left, but to make it clear, I believe in these things that my recovery works by the conjunction use of three different forces. The steps, fellowship, and fellowship including my sponsor and my sponsor, and my high power. If I don't have these three forces that work together, there is no recovery for me. My high power is the center of my steps. I can't do, I can't do step three without a sense of my high power. I can't look at myself without the steps, without step three, step 10, without my sponsor. Because that's another beautiful thing when you become a sponsor. You need to look at yourself. The things you say to people, and you look at yourself like, really? And the crucial part of my recovery also was my sponsor, because my sponsor said to me, the first 2 months we were working together, he said to me, I will love you until you be able to love yourself. And I thought love meant acceptance. What it meant, what I realized 7 years later, that love meant I will love you until you be able to see yourself for who you truly are and be okay with that. And it took me 6 years. 6 years later, I'm 5.5 years clean now. And I wouldn't say I love myself, but I'm very comfortable with myself. I'm very comfortable with the person I became. I became the son that my mom wanted me to be. I'm the brother of a very unwell person. And I do this every day. I go to meetings almost every day. Still, I do service in and out. And that can be cleaned so fast. So if you got something from this, I'm glad. If you don't have nothing from this, just wait until the break, and then you're going to have something more. Mm-hmm. And I'll leave it there. Thank you.